Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Sabrina is bringing with her a very, very popular book. I remember seeing it at the top of the bestseller list. It seemed like it was on
everyone's Christmas list last year.
It is Educated by Tara Westover. Tell us how you found out about the book.
Okay, so have either of you guys read this book before?
No, we have not.
Okay, I had no idea about this book. Like, I knew nothing. I got an email from my scholarship foundation that funded, like, college. And they were like, hey, we're going to host a book club with alumni. Like, if you're interested, here's the book. And I was like, okay, cool. I copied the title, put it in our catalog. I was like, oh, awesome. We have 3 copies. Great. Let me go grab one. So I actually couldn't get one. I had to put it on hold. And so then it came in pretty quickly. And I was like, oh, man, this is great. I'm excited. And Arlene saw, like, the book I was reading. And she was like, oh, I checked out another one of those just the other day. It's, like, it's been coming through a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I wonder if they're my book club. Like, I wonder if they're part of the Terry Foundation. Like, I was like, oh, man. Like, not even thinking that this was a super popular
book. That it was also a popular book to other people.
I mean, for the longest time, you couldn't even find it on the shelf, which it sounds like you really basically still can't.
So. Yeah, you really can't. I think I even saw it in Material Management. They may have ordered another one. Mary's working on it. Yeah, so so it was
maybe,
really cool.
Is there something coming out related to it, maybe?
Not that I know of. Okay. I did a little research at the end after I got done with it. Where is she now? What's happening? And no, like, nothing's really coming.
It's just a random resurgence.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's a resurgence.
Yeah, I don't think it's
just popular. It remained that popular.
Because it came out last year, right?
It came out in 2018.
Oh, okay.
Spring 2018. And it's been on the bestseller list since then.
Oh, wow.
And so it hit, like, 100th week or something of still being on the best.
That's insane. That's like Harry Potter fame.
Yeah. Tell us if you think it deserves 100 weeks on the bestseller list.
I was really excited. I started reading it because I really couldn't get into anything else I had on my checkout list, you know? So I was like, all right, let's try this memoir. And so I started reading it and I got a couple chapters in and I stopped and I was like, Justin, let me tell you about the book I'm reading. So I basically, like, summarized the first few chapters, which would have been easier if he had just read it because my summary was way too long. And he was like, no, that sounds really cool. And then goes back to playing video games. And I'm like, well, I'll update you as I'm reading it.
I'll let you know what happens.
Yeah, I'll let you know. And he's like, okay, cool. As you go through the book, like, it just gets even more shocking and you just want to keep reading. And so I'll tell you what it's about now.
Yes, sure.
So it is about a girl who grew up in a large family in Idaho. And her family was survivalist. Mm-hmm. She's the youngest of 7 children. They were a Mormon family. And she grew up working in a junkyard that her dad owned. Her mom was an unlicensed midwife and herbalist. And she never went a day to public school.
Wow.
She also never really homeschooled either. Mom just never really happened. Mm-hmm. The last 4 children didn't have birth certificates. They were born at home. They were completely off the grid. They were never registered. She never did, like, driver's ed. She never did any of those things that go along with public school. Several of her siblings, like, no one graduated. Like, the first couple went to school for a little while, but then their dad got super paranoid that the government was going to take his children and do all kinds of crazy things. So he pulled them out. And they just worked for the dad in the junkyard and did, like, some construction projects throughout the years and things like that. But yeah, it tells her story as starts when she's about 7 and she just kind of talks about what it was like. And then about the age of 9 where she had to go out and start working in the junkyard a lot more and what that was like for her. And so dangerous. Like,
yeah, I was about to ask, what kinds of tasks can a 9-year-old do in a junkyard?
Basically, they had a lot of pastures of just, like, literally junk. And then her dad gave her, like, this is where we're working. You need to find the copper and the, no, tin and the steel or something. And it was, like, divide it up. And so he's like, it goes in this bin, it goes in that bin. And so she's trying to work, but everything's heavy. And she's, you know, doesn't have really good work gloves and her boots are men's boots, you know, so she's trying to work, but they didn't follow any sort of, like, rhythm. So they would just throw stuff at the bins. So she actually would get hit by things. And so she had to learn how to duck when her dad would, like, let out a big breath. She knew that something was about to be thrown and it was just insane. And later on, she gets severely injured. They're dumping, like, a load of scrap, and her dad tells her to climb up into the bin that's on top of a forklift and is like, help the rest of it go out when I dump it forward.
Oh my gosh.
Well, she's up there and so crazy, like, a piece of steel, it goes through her inner thigh.
Oh gosh.
And she's screaming for him to, like, stop that, like, if the load shifts, like, who knows what's going to happen. And he can't hear her because the forklift's too loud.
Oh my
gosh. So it's just awful. She ends up falling out of the bin at the top height because her dad was just dumping the whole thing. And so he looked at her and was like, go home. Your mom will fix you. Like, they didn't go to the hospital. They didn't do anything. And the injuries, that's like minor compared to what ends up happening to her family. Her brother's legs catch on fire and they don't ever go to the hospital. They're in a very horrible car accident. All nine of them were in like a station wagon, and the mom like suffered like a traumatic brain injury and they never took her to the hospital. Like, she had like the migraines, the memory loss, the raccoon eyes. Like, it was just, they were so afraid. The dad is so afraid that, you know, big pharma and the hospital and the government was all working to take away his family or corrupt them. They were very, very religious. So it goes through.
Was the mom also paranoid?
She wasn't paranoid at first, but over time she became that way. So like through the course of her life, she started out very much like, I don't know if I want, I've always been a herbalist, but I don't know if I want to be a midwife. And as her husband said, she had to learn to be a midwife so that they could make more money. And so she becomes an unlicensed midwife and services hundreds of women and takes her daughter Tara with her to help with the births and things at a very, very young age. And it was just crazy that the mom, once she became confident in her midwifery, she just took off and she grew confident. And then after that, they had more money, and so they started stockpiling more and more things. They put an entire fuel tank in the ground so that when Judgment Day came, they would still have fuel when no one else did. They had rifles buried all over the pastures. I mean, their cellar was full of food. Like, they had MREs. Tara slept with a go bag for like when, you know, the feds were gonna come and try and make her go to school. Her dad had packed like a go bag and was like, you run for the mountains.
That's the thing that they're most worried about. It like, yeah, they're gonna make you come and go to school.
It was crazy.
So at what point did Tara break away from that lifestyle?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. So at age 13, her older brother Sean moves back in, and he's like 18, 19, and he's trying to work and, you know, make money living at home. And so she and him grow close, but by the time she's 15, she realizes that no, he's actually super abusive physically and emotionally. And so her one of her older brothers, Tyler, learns of it. He had already broken away. He was the black sheep. He had gone to college. He got into Brigham Young University. He passed himself off as a homeschooled student and was able to get in through his ACT scores. And so he encouraged her to start, you know, trying and like, let's get your ACT scores. I'll send you books. Like, let's get you out of there. And she was very hesitant. She was scared. Like, I go, the government will corrupt me and I'll go to hell. Not like, oh, I'm scared because I don't know how to go to college. No, I'm going to go there and I'm going to get corrupted and I'm going to go to hell. Like, it was just so, she was so ingrained in like their doctrine that her dad preached. And so she gets accepted and she goes to college at 17, having never gone a day in public school.
Never gone to school.
Never done anything. And so she gets placed in like an apartment with some other girls, and she thinks it's just the most scandalous thing. They drink Diet Coke. They go to the grocery store on Sundays. That's the Lord's Day. Like, she cannot comprehend what's like happening. Their skirts don't go all the way to the ground. They show their ankles. Like, it was just like, it was traumatic for her to like go from
culture shock.
Yeah. And so it was just, God, it was so interesting. And as she's in school, she just learned so much of things she didn't know existed, like the Holocaust. She didn't know how to say the word Holocaust because she's never seen it before. Didn't know what it was about. And of course, everyone in class is like, you don't joke about things like that. She's like, I don't know what it is, you know? So it was just like this whole awakening for her when it comes to the actual world. She goes on, y'all, to get her master's and her PhD, and she goes to Cambridge. And it's just, it's amazing, her story and the things that she goes through. And later in the book, it really talks about family and those relationships. And she's basically estranged from all of her family except for Tyler.
So. Does she still like follow the Mormon faith, or?
I don't believe so. No, I don't think so. I
could imagine that her experience probably made it really hard to extract certain parts to be okay with, you know, when it's that melded into go climb up onto the bin and like, and get the metal out.
Yeah, absolutely. It became like a thing where she didn't know the difference between government and what the Bible said, like, because her dad preached as if the government was like, it was very much like he melded the two so much together that she didn't know what was different. And so,
like, that's the law.
That's, you know, yeah, that kind exactly.
of excuse. Not yeah. excuse, but reasoning for things when kids go, but why do we have to do that?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, a lot of times when you have, like, especially particularly stringent religious sects or whatever you want to call it, a lot of times there's this tight-knit group of people that are kind of steering it. Do they just stay completely isolated, or do they have other people that they kind of share beliefs with?
So it's interesting. They went to the church in their very small town in Idaho, but they were never as devout, quote unquote, devout. Like, no one else was ever as devout as them. And that's what they were kind of referred to. She said that, like, growing up, she just, that's what she always knew, that everyone else wasn't as devout as she were. Like, they would get home from church and her dad would just rag on, like, the women's clothes were inappropriate, they shouldn't have been speaking, they and just, like, go on and on about all the different people. And so they didn't really have, like, a cult type thing or like a following until later on when she was in college. Her mom, her dad had suffered a horrific burn injury on almost all of his body, where his face had actually burned everything, and they didn't take him to a hospital. And so mom, like, just kept him at home and nursed him back to health over a few months. And from there, they kind of got this idea that their health, like, God could fix sicknesses, not actual health doctors. So they started preaching it, and that's when,
so,
like,
the faith healing kind of stuff,
kind of. Yeah, she does this, like, clicking thing with her thumbs, and, like, it was just like, it was like intuitive healing and herbs and things like that. And so that business has actually taken off, and her parents are very successful with their faith and herbal healing now, but they don't have a relationship.
Has she tried to reach out to any of her siblings or see if she can get them?
She did. Yeah. So, like, she did so much. And this is, I think, where I really connected with her, was she tried. Like, she tried so hard. She reached out to her older sister, who also confessed to abuse by her older brother, Sean. Wow. She also reached out to, you know, her siblings and just really tried to, like, hey, like, what, like, let's talk about, like, let's have a relationship. And her parents started telling everyone that she was possessed the devil. So so they really just were like, we're not talking to you until you have a, you know, priest healing or priest blessing. And her dad showed up at Harvard one day, like, and was like, I'll give this to you, but you have to recant everything you've said about your brother. Like, everything that's ever happened to you, you have to say it didn't happen. And she's like, but that's, I can't do it. And he was like, well, then the devil will keep you, and just left. And so she tried so much with her family. And to me, that connected so much to how I have felt in the past with my some of my own family members, of how far do you go? Like, what, what do you put yourself in? How deep do you put yourself into a relationship? And what's worth your mental health, your physical health, things like that. But she writes her mom when she's in Idaho and is like, hey, I'd love to see you. And her mom lets her know that until the demon or the devil comes out of her, and she apologizes to her father and lets her father do the blessing, that she won't be seeing her. So she only has a relationship with her brother, Tyler, who lives away from the family. He has a wife and kids and things like that. So
it sounds like Tyler must have had a really hard time before he had some other family connection leave the fold as well.
Yeah, his avenue for escape was when he went to college, he stayed with his mom's aunt. So his mom's family did not support what she was doing or who she was. And so they are the only family that Tara now connects with that is related to her mom. And she's thankful for that. She has, you know, two aunts. She had grandparents before they passed away that she was able, you know, to get to know a little bit more. But that was all Tyler had when he went to college. And then he somehow went out. He got his master's too, I think. And so,
well, I'm sure coming from that low of a stimulating environment, you had to be, like, hungry for knowledge, like, by the time you get out. Almost like you're trying to catch up to the rest of your peers.
Go to a place where it seems like everyone knows things that you don't know. I can imagine it becomes almost, like, necessary for you to feel safe, for you to learn as much as you can, to feel like... 'cause, like, can you imagine sitting in a room and everyone like falls quiet because they start talking about the Holocaust, and you're just sitting there like, I'm really confused, what is this? And everyone gets mad at you for not knowing, and you're just like, I don't know what to do.
Exactly. The same thing happened too with slavery. Like, mm-hmm. she knew that there was slavery in the Bible, but she didn't actually know about like slavery we had in the United States, mm-hmm. or like civil justice, any of that that happened in like the 60s. She just didn't know any of that ever happened. There was only one person of color in her town, and it was someone that had been adopted through the church. And so she really, like, she knew nothing. And so I think that really drove her hunger for education. And I think that's why she named her book that too, because she just didn't stop. Like, once she got going, she got her bachelor's, went on to Cambridge. She was there for the Gates. She got the Gates scholarship. Mm-hmm. And so she did that. And then she was at Harvard. And, you know, there was like one period of time where her life got really dark, as far as she just was like, okay, I can't do it. Like, her mental space was done. And she said that's when she discovered watching TV shows. Like, she watched all of those, because they didn't really have TV.
Yeah.
She watched all those like series that she had missed out on. And before she knew it, a year had gone by. And then she's like, no, now I need to get help and that sort of thing, which that's where I connected. You know, I had gone for years, like, what is too much? What is enough for me to do in this relationship with my family? And then I was like, I can't do anything more. I went to counseling, similar to what Tara did. And I just connected with her on that at some point, enough is enough. And she still tries, which, you know, that says a lot about her character.
Yeah.
I went and watched so many interviews after I finished the book. So I'm so excited. She's so fascinating.
What does she do now?
Yeah. So they call her a public figure because she speaks and like goes to events and that sort of thing. But she's like, please don't call me that. Like, literally in the interview, she's like, please don't call me that. I really don't see myself as that. I'm just sharing my story. And I love that everyone read it. I watched an interview from February of 2020 for Corona and everything. And they asked, what is she doing next? And she was like, I might write a novel. I might just do journal entries. I might write some essays, maybe some short stories. She was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I just love that. She was like, you know what? All this has happened, and I want all the fame of the book to keep going. You know, like, people reading it, people learning and that sort of thing. She goes, but I don't want to be tied to it mm-hmm. anymore. Like, I want to do something else. She goes, I used to travel for me, and then I traveled because of all the like publicity and the public speaking.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I want to get back to where do I want to go for me? So she's just really focusing on herself right now, which I think is so cool. So.
Was there anything, I know you mentioned that she was excited about discovering TV. Was there anything in particular that she really enjoyed doing, discovering once she went back into society?
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. There was a time where she was in, let me also say, when she was in her, like doing her bachelor's, she didn't tell anybody where she came from. Like, she had a boyfriend at one time, and she never talked about her family or that they had a junkyard or, you know, her mom was a herbalist, like any of those things. And so when she was doing her master's program in England, she finally was like, you know what? This is it. Like, I'm going to work up the nerve. I'm going to actually tell someone about who I am. And so for like the spring break or fall break or something, they took a trip to Paris and stayed with one of the people's like families. And like, she got to see, they traveled for a bit. She saw Rome. She saw the Colosseum. Like, all of those things were just so mind-boggling for her. And after, towards the end of that trip, they were just talking about like, oh, my dad does this or mine does that. And she goes, my dad owns a junkyard. And they all just stopped and were like, oh my gosh, Tara's talking about her family. and from then on, she just owned it. Like, she just, she didn't try and hide it. It is what it is. And from there, she just really went for it. At one point, she was like in Saudi Arabia, like visiting a boyfriend. And they, you know, like, it was just fascinating. Like, she really just was like, I'm going to embrace it and learn about the world I live in.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did her dad even run the junkyard? Did people like bring him scrap, or did he just go searching for stuff?
I'm really not sure how the junkyard aspect happened, because they talk about how she lives on a mountain and like they have all the pastures around on the mountain, but that her grandmother, her dad's mom, lived down the mountain, and she always fought for the junkyard to stop so that she still had like a yard. She's like, don't invade my space. Like, I don't want all that here. So like, for somehow, like, there, I don't know how they got the scrap. She never really talked about it, but she did talk about, as like, when Sean came back to live with them, they opened like a construction business and started building more like hay barns and sheds. And then that grew in itself. And so there was also like a really bad accident, like at a construction site. Sean fell off like scaffolding that wasn't put up properly, and he suffered a, you know, a really bad brain injury. And because I was in a public place, someone called 911, and he actually did get medical help, but that, I think that's where it really messed with his mental state. He became really off after that. But yeah, so I don't really know how the junkyard started.
I imagine if you just opened up your yard and said, if you have stuff you don't want, bring it here.
Yeah.
People would be pretty.
Same thing kind of happens with animals. If you're like, we're going to call ourselves a no-kill animal shelter.
And everyone suddenly starts bringing their animals there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now I know why it was so popular.
I couldn't put it down.
Roller coaster.
I read it really fast. It was so good. And there's other books that I was recommended after reading this too. Mm-hmm. Glass Castle was one of them. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it yet. It's on my list too. But yeah, I just had no idea. Like, I feel like I skipped over that. I'm like, what was I doing 2 years ago? Like, how did I miss the buzz and all that came with this book?
Well, apparently people are still discovering it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It sounds like it probably is a really good book club feature too.
Yes.
I'm excited to talk with like the other alumni and just see what they thought as well. I was a first generation college student. So the Terry Foundation really allowed me to go to college in a way that no one in my family had ever done before. And I remember getting to college and having no idea what I was doing. Like, I didn't know that my dorms... didn't know what like how my dorms were gonna look like. I was just so uneducated that I didn't even know where to look to learn more about like what my dorm was gonna be like, or I didn't know that college classes were in hours. So when everyone kept talking about, oh, this course is 3 hour, this one's 4, I was like, is that like a fancy language? Like, what does that mean? And I just looked like a country bumpkin trying to figure out what the heck I was doing in the big city. I really connected on that a little bit, because she ends up in like the wrong, she had put on her like schedule a junior level class as a freshman because she just didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. I just, there was so many things about it that I just connected with, and maybe that's why I read through it so fast. But other people must connect to it too, since it's still so popular.
I don't think it's uncommon to feel out of place in a place, and this is just kind of the extreme version of that.
Yeah.
And it's also just a really interesting look at those pockets of America that sometimes people forget still exist, that are very removed from normal, everyday, popular culture American life in a way that is shocking. Like, you could take those pictures from, like, her memory and be like, oh, this is clearly, like, a really small country. Right. like a backwoods. And you're like, oh, no, it's in Idaho.
Yeah.
Or Iowa or wherever.
Yeah, Idaho.
And
yeah.
Iowa State.
Yeah.
It's shocking to know that like 100 miles from where you are, there's probably a very similar family, you know?
They actually talk about a family in the book that's like them, kind of lives far away. I think their names were, her dad called them the Weavers, but that was when her dad just went really extreme because the feds had gotten to the Weavers, and like Randy Weaver's son was shot, and then the mom was killed. In her mind, and the way her dad taught it, was that there was like, they came because the kids weren't in school and that they weren't, you know, following the laws, and so that's why the feds killed them. And she later finds out that he was like selling like armed weapons was like so much worse, like there were so many other things going on besides the fact that they were homeschooling their children.
I mean, and the same thing could be said about her family. Like, if someone did come, it wouldn't be that they're not going to school that gets them in trouble. The thing that would get them in trouble is the severe emotional and physical abuse, like employing your child at 7 years old to work in a in a landfill.
Does she talk at all about going with her mother to help with any of the births?
She does. Yeah, she does.
And that would leave a very
I'm just thinking from your face that it was a big thing.
Well, because... So her mom was under, like, learning from the midwife that was, like, in the area. Mm-hmm. But then the midwife had to move, and so her mom became the midwife.
Yeah.
But the other midwife, her daughter came, same age as Tara, came to all the births and did everything. And her mom wouldn't let Tara come in the beginning. She's like, no, like, you don't need to see this yet. But as she became the only midwife, sometimes she needed an extra set of hands and things like that. And so sometimes the births didn't go well. Other times they were great, but you just never knew. And so there was one time, like, they ended up having to take the mom and the baby to the hospital because she coached Tara on what to say. She's like, we were not there delivering the baby. We were just there visiting, and she needed help. Like, this, you cannot let them know that I'm an unlicensed midwife. Like, I don't deliver babies. So like at 9 years old, she was like, don't deliver babies. weren't here to deliver a birth, like coaching herself on the way to the hospital.
Yeah.
And so the mom was like so clever. She, when the doctor was like, so what was happening? And she was like, I don't know. Something just came out of her. And they were like, yeah, that's the fetus and the placenta. Like that's what she's having a baby. And she's like, is that what they look like? Like totally played it dumb so that she wouldn't get caught. And Tara was like, that's when I knew my mom had gained this confidence in her new role and nobody was taking that away from her. But with that confidence also came the ability to agree with everything her dad said. So there was never any opportunity that really there from then on for her and her mom.
And did her mom kind of have that the husband's the head of the household, I must submit to him mentality? Is that kind of why she went along with his paranoia?
She definitely did, but then I think she also started to believe it. So like Tara can sing amazing. And so she sang for the choir, church. She just like blew everyone away and everyone was so proud. Like, oh, voice from heaven. What an angel, you know? And so the mom encouraged her to apply to like the theater or something, like local theater and that sort of thing. And her dad was adamantly against it. But the mom knew that this was like really prestigious and we would look really good. And her, you know, her husband would look, you know, really great for having his daughter in these plays. And so even though they said those things about what she had to wear and the things like the songs and that sort of thing, her dad still came to every performance because it was all about him. So like he let his daughter do this. He did. But every time he would take her to like theater practice or whatever, he would just talk about how she was being corrupted. And that. But as soon as it came for performance time, he was there to receive all the love. So she later finds out in college, she's in a psychology class. She learns like what bipolar disorder is and schizophrenia. And she realizes like that's what her dad has. And so that's where the difference in moods and things like that.
Does she have any idea if her family read the book?
Oh, they did. There was like lawsuit. I read all this afterwards. There was like a lawsuit and they were saying like she was lying, that none of the abuse was true and that none of those things happened. But something she did, and I realized it when I was reading the notes, was like she had an official fact checker. Her book. So like fact check her book. And so what she did was she gave him all the information and then let him contact all of her siblings. And like there's a couple of parts where it has like an asterisk and at the bottom of the page it was like Luke remembers this incident this way. So even though that's her recollection of her childhood, she also gets the perspectives of her siblings if they differ from what she remembers, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting because as a 9-year-old or 7-year-old, yeah. you know, you might not remember everything and her older siblings might have more understanding.
It's
so
interesting that her siblings would cooperate with a fact checker, though.
Only some of them did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
only some of them did.
Part of it is protective, like defensive. Like, I'll cooperate, but only so I can prove that you were telling a lie or that right. you were saying it the wrong way. That didn't happen that way.
Yes. That came from a lot of Sean's accounts was like, yeah. no, I didn't do any of these things. But I just think, like, how bold of you to, like, write your story and then say, now go call all of these people, the people who lived in town. Like, she had, like, they checked all of, like, where she did the theater stuff at, mm-hmm. the church. Like, she literally was like, please go fact check everything I've written. So she stands by it. And her family has a successful, like, you know, business. But they said that it was slander on them and their business. And that, so there's, like, a lawsuit. I didn't read all that, like, came of the lawsuit or anything. But
it might even still be ongoing. That stuff takes forever.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Whew. It's kind of wild to think that a family that wants to stay that isolated is still willing to go hire lawyers. And
I think it came a lot with their newfound fame, their business, because like they took flights to Harvard to see her and this was in the height of their business. Like, and he joked about like money's not a problem anymore, like that sort of thing to her, because they went to dinner and he ordered 7 main dishes. Because he didn't know, like, what he wanted to eat yet. So he ordered 7. And she's like, really? Like, just order 1 or 2. Like, well, I'll share, whatever. And he's like, money's not a problem. Like, that sort of thing. And when she did go home, one of the last times she was home, they had added, like, extensions to the house and built, like, this grand, like, dome that was, like, a place for everyone to come together. Like, it was growing into what you mentioned before. Like, having yeah. a lot of followers and that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. when she was there as a child, it didn't have that. Yeah, it's a whirlwind. And I was just fascinated to hear someone else's perspective. You can read that in fiction books and things like that, and that's great. But it was just really nice to hear something just completely real, and this was their story. Mm-hmm. And I don't normally go for memoirs, but I liked this one a lot.
All right. That's all the questions I can think of.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing us a review of a bestseller that I still have managed to not check out. But it looks like a lot of people are still checking it out.
Yes, they are. Thank you guys for listening. I enjoyed talking about it.
We always enjoy having you. And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations. Bye.